All right. Hello, everybody. Good morning. Thanks for coming. Big crowd. Thanks for helping keeping me sober. I couldn't have done this without you. That's just the absolute truth that I couldn't do this. I think most of us who are in sobriety understand that. It's a total we thing. My name is Aaron, and my sobriety date is February 28th, 2014, so 9 years going on 10 in February. I was getting shit-faced at work, walked across the street to a restaurant called Red Pepper, had a couple drinks there. My last drink was Fernet Blanc, which is a bitter Italian cordial. I love bitter. proceeded to drive home and got arrested. Just got arrested for the first and hopefully the only time. We'll see what happens. I'll see what the rest of my life looks like. Went to Atlanta. What is it? The jail in Atlanta. I was fortunately able to bail myself out. I got home around maybe 4 or 5 in the morning and got in the shower and immediately went to a real estate convention because I knew at that time I knew that if I didn't go to that convention, that I would regret it for the rest of my life. I would punish myself. I was like interceding in a potential resentment. I knew patterns in my life, and I knew kind of resentments that I had, was kind of sort of aware of them, not in the way that these bring awareness, but I knew that if I didn't go, so I spent 3 days at this convention in Atlanta. At the time I was doing, flipping and things like that and trying to learn about the industry. At the very end of that, instead of going to the one-on-one meeting where they would probably try to sell me like a $10,000 coaching package or whatever, I was like, I need to go to a meeting. I need to, I had at that point had already sought out where to go, and I left at the end of that convention and went to my first meeting and saved my life. You look back and you realize that the worst day, seemingly at that time, actually turns out to be the best day, that best thing that has ever happened to you. I went to that meeting, and it's kind of weird. You're going to your first meeting. I saw this guy sitting outside while I was sitting outside waiting to go in. Like, is this really where the meeting is? I don't know what I'm doing here, and blah, blah, blah. And he goes in, and he looked all angry and shit. And then I get in there, and he's like 2 years sober. He's all happy as crap. And I was like, oh, my God, I totally missed that one, They give the chips out in the beginning of the meeting there, and a lot of the guys were talking about things that they were doing with one another, like going hunting and fishing, and I was like, I want to do that, like in my head, right? Because I want to be a part of what everybody else is doing, and because I always felt alone, and that's what I said in my first meeting. It's like when I came to me sharing, it says I just felt so totally alone, and they gave me the book with all the meetings, and they suggested the How place because of the location of, where I live. And I just started coming here, and I did, 365 days in a row, coming to this place. So I started at the 10 a.m. meeting, 10:30, and then, kind of migrated to the 8 a.m. The journey just went from there. So I'm going to backtrack just a little bit, tell you a little bit about my family. And where I came from, I'm from a small town in Massachusetts called Raynham. My father was a school teacher, so this is a little my father. So I'm going to add in like the main things about my father that are both resentment, and same with my family. So both resentment and major things that occurred, right? So I get through the family quickly. My father was a school teacher. For the public school, he was a woodworking teacher. My father built our house. When I was like 3 or 4, I don't remember doing it, but I look at my father, the house. My father built that house, like all basically alone. He got a little bit of help when he was putting the roof on, I guess, but he did everything. He did all the woodwork in the house. It's just an amazing, amazing man that I never appreciated any of those things. He was a Vietnam veteran and suffered tremendously from that war. And I don't know anything about it. Don't know anything about my father with regard to that war. He never spoke about that war. But I know that he suffered tremendously. I remember later in life, you know, maybe 17, 18, my father was, went to, my father was in an action and a grenade exploded and killed his three best friends, and he survived. And I remember when I was about 18, 19, maybe, he went and he visited he went to the Vietnam Memorial, and you know the picture, like everybody's picture, hand on the wall. He went to one of the families in Maine, and they said to him that they wish he died instead of their son. My father was very sick. Physically sick. He had a heart attack when I was about in third grade. So he was not able to do the things that he wanted to do with his sons. Right. So prior to his heart attack, he would take my older brother to his hockey games. He was always involved. You know, he was a coach, baseball, all this kind of stuff, and all of that ended. So as I was growing up, because I was a couple years behind my older brother, he wasn't able to participate. And while I kind of had some resentment about that, you know, growing up, the only thing that matters with my father, because, like, you get to that point where you have an experience that really shapes the way you perceive an individual, I think. And that was when I told him that I was gay. And I, right in between my first and second semester in college. And he said, I thought it would matter, but it doesn't. So that's how I see my father, is that man who loved me. And as I went through the program, recognizing how physically sick he was, unable to, you know, I look at the house and how he built it. You know, a father would teach a son how to do that. And not only was I not engaged, but he wasn't capable of teaching me those kinds of things. All of the things a man is supposed to teach his son. And I don't blame him for that, but, you know, it is a thing. You miss out on those things. The engagement of a father. And that, like the word taint comes into my head. It taints how you are. But that's a negative word. Like, my father didn't do anything deliberately. You know, he was sick. He wasn't able to do those things. So that's my father. And just some of the key things. My mother, She was a nurse. She was a nurse for 43 years in the same hospital on the same floor. And she worked all the time. She worked nights, which is kind of not ironic, but I work nights. You know, I always have worked in the restaurant industry. And so I kind of like took that pattern on from my mother, which means that I'm never around. You know, she was never around. But when she was around, she made it known, and there was a lot of tremendous arguments and, you know, just abusive language towards the family, pitting the kids against the father. And, you know, I won't blame my mother. It's not my father's not, you know, a part of this, but, you know, I see my father through that comment that he made to me now. And my mother was very nasty growing up, and, our relationship is much better now. But she was never there. She never participated in any things that we did. And it was just kind of very, very volatile and verbally abusive home. I would say she's an alcoholic, like at that point, but she wasn't drinking. She was a dry drunk, or, you know, I don't know when she stopped drinking or whatnot. But she definitely had a lot of isms with regard to the behavior, which I see in myself now. So I, you know, there's compassion that comes with that. But it was all, you know, a lot of the fights were always about money, you know, because she was always paying for things because my father couldn't work extra. It was just a very volatile. They did their best to give us everything that they wanted, you know, to give their children. You know, we had a little place on the beach where we could go, and that was kind of like my solace. But something that I learned from those, that relationship with my mother and father, one, there's really no love there. In some sense, I kind of wish that they had gotten a divorce. But I always ran away. Like, I was a walker. I would walk around the block all the time. Like, I would get out of the house, always leaving the house. I'm always leaving. Guess what I do now? I'm always leaving. Gotta go. See you later. Out the door. Gotta go. Getting my shit. Going out the door. Going to yoga. Going to work. You know, going to a meeting. See you later. I'm leaving. Going. You know, and so, and almost without regard to the impact on the person. So in a way, my partner is just, you know, I look back now, everything that I eliminate, anything that I eliminate in my life now, in terms of spending time, I give it back to him. So, like, I stopped doing my yoga class on Monday nights so that I could give that time to him. Because I'm always leaving. Just always leaving. So whenever I eliminate something now, it's always to give the time back to him because I took so much from him. So it just was not around. But then that's what I had to do. It's my defense mechanism. It doesn't make me a bad person. I learned it. I just learned it. It was my coping mechanism. And so I, you know, just got to work through that. My mother was there for one major instance in my life, which was like in between my first, well, at the end of my second year of college, I kind of had a breakdown. I was confronted by myself. By who I was and the fact that I couldn't learn, I couldn't study, I couldn't, you know, I was switching majors. I couldn't because I didn't know how. I wasn't taught how to educate myself or things like that. And so, you know, I kind of had a breakdown and she came and she got me from college, which was a great, you know, great moment for her to show up for me. And I always remember that. I have an older brother. His name is Luke. He was a, you know, when I was younger, he was a drinker. He was a partier. He went out with the kids and the, you know, pit parties in Boston, in Massachusetts. And he played a lot of sports and was kind of very resentful. My father had his heart attack. My brother was in the car. He was actually taking my brother back from a hockey game. And that was an extremely traumatic experience for my older brother, right? For me, I was a little, 2 years younger. I wasn't in the situation. I just knew that my father went to the hospital, but my brother was there, like observing the, you know, the illness as it was occurring. My father was having a heart attack for like 8 hours before he ever went to the hospital. And that, so he lost 40% of his heart. So I know that really transformed my brother. And I just kept my brother at arm's length, my older brother at arm's length, just because he was so volatile and angry. But we are much closer today, than we were. And, you know, he knows a lot about my story. He and my twin brother are at, you know, loggerheads. They just like... are constantly, well, if they spoke to one another, they would be beating the shit out of one another. And that's just kind of the way it is. But because of the program, I was able to detach myself enough from both of the experiences of my brothers in order to be able to be of service to them. So instead of trying to get what I needed out of that relationship, trying to give, and thank God for this program for that, you know, because I'm the one who visits. They're not going to visit me. You know, I got to accept that they're not going to visit me, but I get to visit my brothers now, even though they have problems, right? That they are like my mother and father were in a lot of ways. My mother actively has ripped down her own family, right? Like fighting with her own family. And it's almost like she taught my brothers to do that to one another. And so when my mother passes, it's going to be a very interesting experience that I'm going to need your help for because it's just going to be an all-out bash. And I don't think my mother ever intended to do that, but I see it coming because I saw the same pattern in her family, which you don't see. Like, I can see that pattern now. I can see it. I can see what she's done and how she's behaved and how that is happening in our own family now. So, you know, I can't control any of that. All I can do is just transform myself enough in order to be of service in whatever moment comes. My twin brother, love my twin brother. You know, when you have a twin, you have a best friend. And we were best friends for, you know, all the way up until I went to college. And we did sports together. You know, we had the same friends, all those kinds of things. So love my twin brother dearly. But the one experience with him that transformed our relationship for me, you know, in a negative sense, was that I left him. I left my twin brother. And I had to, in a certain sense, because at the time when I was going to college, I didn't realize that I was, you know, I was gay. And that was a big part of, like, there's something missing in my life. You know, this is, you know, emptiness that we talk about, and like feeling like there's something missing. What's missing? And for me, it was, well, at the time, I thought it was because, well, when I went to college, like, immediately I was around people who accepted it. I started hearing about it, and I was like, well, wow, okay, well, that's it. And I wasn't having any, you know, intimate relationships or experiences. I just recognized that that's the way it was. I just recognized that. And that was a huge experience in my life. And I thought, you know, the whole time in my life when I was growing up, I was like, this is something missing about me. There's something missing about me. And then I come out and then I'm like, oh, this is it. And then I realize, you know, as I get into the program, I'm like, that fucking wasn't it. It wasn't it. That wasn't what I was looking for. It was a part of my identity that I didn't know about. And, you know, all the experiences that come with that, but it was a good part of life, but it wasn't really what I was looking for. It wasn't the thing that I was looking for. But I left my brother on the train depot going to college, and they left, my father and mother left with him, and they came back. Because my brother didn't say goodbye. He forgot to say goodbye. He forgot to give me a hug. And he was in tears. And I was like, and at the time it was like, whatever. Now I'm like, that's the moment where, like, that split. You know, your twin brother, like, you grew up in the womb together. We're identical, you know. And you're the same. Like, we're the same. But you wouldn't recognize him if he was standing there. I said, well, you could. He's bigger than me, so. he doesn't do the yoga. but that was the big transformational thing with me and my brother, going to college. I started drinking. I didn't start, you know, I was very, like, anti-drinking growing up, you know, all the way through high school. And I started drinking in between my first and second year of college. And I had my first drinks, like, I think 4th of July between first and second year of college. And then I didn't drink that next year because I didn't have money. But when I came back, when I left school that second year, I was drinking a lot. But in that period, you know, starting to explore my, you know, relationships with people, you know, doing lots of damage, because who do I have as an example is my parents, my mother, my father, and how they showed love to one another, which is just volatile anger. That's not a good way. That's not a good path. But it's the only thing that I knew, you know. And so, and your relationships, just, you know, bailing on people, and, you know, it just didn't work out. It wasn't what I thought relationships would be. You know, I thought it would be better. But, you know, it was me. It was me not understanding how to have a relationship and not understanding how to behave as a man or treat other people. Just trying to get my own needs met. And if you didn't meet them, you were out the door. Bye. See you later. So that's my family. One other instance that was transformational in my, you know, resentments and creating the patterns in my life is that when I came out to my my closest friends at the time, the ones that you grow up from, like, kindergarten, you know, when I came out to them in between first and second year of college, I lost them all. So they just left when I came out to them. So have a difficult time creating relationships with men. For fear of losing those relationships, because they all just went away and never spoke to me again because I was gay. And, you know, I look back on that now. I still feel, you know, a way about it. But because of the spiritual aspects of the program, like, it's not for me to judge people's understanding of those things. It's okay. You know, if you're not pro-gay people, it's okay. I'm okay with it now. It doesn't bother me. right? It's not my business. It's not my business. You know, and for me to make it my business is putting my mind on power things that I have no power on, power over. And so, you know, it's really about letting people be who they are, because they are who they are based on the experiences. And I just told you a bunch of my experiences that made me a shithead, that made me, you know, someone who was a nasty person to be around, you know. So I can't judge other people's, you know, reasoning or whatnot. I try not to do that anymore. Because it's just, it causes more suffering in me, and I've suffered enough. You know, it creates, you know, people have to come to their own terms on all of these issues, all of these things that are occurring in the world today. You have to come to terms on your own. It's up to you, not to me to lecture you on these things. So, and that's just the growth. So, let's see. I did come out to my, so I went to college the first year. The second year I became like a, you know, I was part of the group of people who brought in the freshmen. And I did come out to that whole class, you know, because I felt at the time, you know, I felt like I was suicidal when I first came out. I was really, really messed up in my head, just like trying to figure it out. And I wanted to make sure that those kids coming into the school who felt that they might be in the same kind of situation knew that they weren't alone, and that if they needed to talk to somebody, they could come to me. And it was a good thing for me to be able to do that, to just be, you know, just be who I am and share that, because people don't know that struggle. They don't understand necessarily what that struggle is, to figure out aspects of your identity until later in life. And so it was really important for me to do that, and so I did. And but I was really clueless in college, just educationally, didn't know what I wanted to do, and just socially. You know, didn't know how to treat people, and I was looking for something, like I said. After my second year of college, I decided that, you know, I needed to take time off. I took time off, and I became a waiter. That's when I became a waiter, because I knew I needed to be able to support myself, and that, you know, I've been a waiter for almost over 30 years now, so it's been a good life for me. A lot of alcohol available when you're a waiter, so that's a part of it. Went back to college, got a degree in theater, which I don't use, of course. You know, switching around majors once again, and burning relationships and creating them and throwing them away and treating people like crap, not knowing it, not being aware of it, and you know, caused a lot of you know, hurt people. Hurt people by saying things that cut you to the core, like people had cut me to the core. And you know, those are the things that we do that show when we are in this program. We see who we really are and who we have really been, and the capacity that we have to hurt other people. But with the capacity to know that you can and have hurt other people comes with the flip side of understanding that that's a choice, and that you can choose to be a good person. You know, I've come to believe that being good is not, people are not good. People are animals, and they're trying to survive, and it's a choice to be good. Choice to discipline yourself and to be a good person. And that's just my perspective and things that I've learned recently. But I was not a good person. I really wasn't a good person. I went back to school, graduated, came to Atlanta, did an Alliance Theater. I was there for a little bit doing an internship. And partying and going to the clubs and things like that, going to the Backstreet. Everybody remember Backstreet? Yeah, there we go. All night club. It was the greatest. It was awesome. I love to dance. That's the other thing. It's like if I could do anything, I'd love to dance. I really did love to dance. But that was just a really vacuous time in my life where I wasn't achieving anything. I got a job at, I met my, at, during that period, I did experience a sexual assault, and that really, that's where a lot of the anger came from. You know, a lot of anger because of fear and loss. So that's where powerlessness comes in. Powerlessness, when you experience or have an experience of any kind, whether you're in a war or, you know, male or female, a lot of men have, you know, experiences of being assaulted. And that's something that everyone in this room needs to just recognize, that men experience that as well. And that powerlessness, it gripped me. And that's where a lot of, you know, if I feel like I'm powerless, I want to break your hand. I don't know why. That is the twist in my mind when we talk about the twist in the book. That's the twist that occurs when I experience a sense of powerlessness. I want to break your hand. I met my partner. He helped me get a job at Bones, and I've been at Bones for 23 years now. During that period, you know, September 11th occurred. That was my real first experience of trying to, you know, level up. I was like, wow, I'm not doing jack in my life. This is bullshit. I did the Tony Robbins program, which was a great experience. I did that. I tried to incorporate that into my life. From that, I started doing, I became a manager at the OK Cafe, which is part of the same company. I went back to Bones eventually as a waiter because I failed as a manager. I was fortunate, able to go back as a waiter in the company. No one's ever been able to do that. I didn't fail. I was miserable because I was a drunk. I was drinking my way through it. And also working on real estate. That was when, like, 2010, like, collapse and all of that kind of stuff. And I because of Tony Robbins, I, like, pushed my way through learning how to do real estate. It was like putting my fist through the wall. It's like, because I can't read anything. It's so hard for me to read and to sit down and listen to lectures. And so I just, like, made the shit up. I just made it up, you know. And I eventually, you know, we had up to 8 rental properties. We're down to 5. We did flips. And he did a lot of the work because I can get somebody to do a lot of the work for me because I don't know how to do anything. Right? Nobody knows what that means, right? Nobody experiences that, right? We can get other people to do stuff. And that's a realization right there when you, especially as a man, you don't know how to do anything. That's a tough one. That, like, goes back to my father, the things that a father is supposed to teach a son. And that's okay, you know. So we did the real estate, and then that brings me to being arrested. My partner still does real estate. I haven't talked about my partner much. He's a very kind man, and he wanted to save somebody. So I think that's initially why he stayed with me, because he was the kind of person who wants to save someone. But it got, you know, by 2014, he was drinking. I'm like, we're drinking. It's just, you know, you're putting your fist through the wall in everything aspect of your life. And there was no happiness, no joy. It was all anger. Every time I would drive home from work, I would be angry. Well, I'm always angry. But I would be angry at him. This is very interesting. I mentioned this many times in the rooms here. There was a time at which I experienced a lot of pain in my right side hip, the side body, because of the way I work. I carry a tray. You do that for 30 years, that's going to cause a problem in your body, right? Everybody has physical movements that cause problems over time if you don't address them. And the day that I was able to get rid of the arthritic type pain in my right hip by doing some certain stretches that I learned, instantly I was not angry. I was like, whoa. So I'm not saying that I'm not angry because of experiences in my life. I'm saying a part of the anger that I have is caused by physical pain. Part of that goes to the yoga. In one of the yoga sutras, is the mind focused on the sense, anger is the mind focused on the sensation of pain. When you're in physical pain and your mind is locked on that pain, it's almost like you can't think of anything else. And the product of that focus, that concentration on that pain, is anger. And I was able to break that link, and not only break the link, but notice it. I was able to see it. And if I'm at work and I start to get angry, I'm in pain. Physically, my right hip is, once again, I can tell, I'm like, or my hip starts to hurt, I'm like, oh, here I go. I'm going to start ripping on people in the restaurant, on, you know, the staff, because that's how I react when I'm in pain. But now I can get myself out of pain like that, which is a miracle. It's an absolute miracle to be able to make those kind of connections. Anyways, I kind of jumped ahead there. So I'm in the program. Let's see. You know, I'm a monster at work. I was a monster at work, just treating people like shit, drinking like everybody else, hiding my drinks, all that kind of stuff. Just a monster, like my mother, you know, ripping on them, ripping on everybody else. Now we rip on one another, but we do it together. It's like the locker room, which is an awesome experience. It really is. It's just like we're guys ripping on one another, as opposed to ripping people, tearing one another down to hurt them, you know. So really appreciate that experience now. I want to get into a couple of the... that's kind of where I'm at. That's where I was at, right? And so 2 years in, well, I'm going to start. I'm going to go to come to where I've recognized my powerlessness. And the first time I told my story, he wasn't here, but he's here today. So, Chris. My drinking career was short and destructive, and my alcohol, I'm sorry, and I look back, I realize how true it is that one of the primary differences between alcoholics and non-alcoholics is the non-alcoholic changes their behavior to meet their goals, and the alcoholic changes their goals to meet their behaviors. And Chris said that right there. And that's when I recognized powerlessness, like what my powerlessness was, because I went through this Tony Robbins program, and I know how to take action. Massive action. I can take massive action on anything. And I still do that. I mean, it's a thing. It's like, you know, you have a goal, take action immediately on it. So you start the ball rolling, right? And so I can do that, right? At the time, I'm putting my fist through the wall to take action. Now it's much different. But what I realized in that moment was that I was tearing down everything that I had trained myself to build up, like that real estate business. My drinking was ripping it down while I was trying to build it up. So to me, that was like the ultimate powerlessness. That's where I saw how insane I was. That I would use alcohol and allow myself to rip down everything that I was trying to build up. That I struggled so hard to teach myself to build up. That was just the powerlessness that I recognized. And I'm so grateful, Chris, for hearing that, you know, because it's in the book, right? You got to read the book, including the stories, right? Because what I got to do is I got to find me. I got to see me. Somewhere in this book is me, you know, and that's the first place, you know. And I left the room crying, and a gentleman, Ron, came out and got me, brought me back in the room, you know, stayed. You know, when you see you, the truth, this is about the truth. The truth doesn't always feel good, but the truth always leads to the best outcome. Always leads to the best outcome. This is the best outcome right here, is that sobriety. So that's a spiritual experience. That's a shift in my thinking, right? Is that God? Like, is that the God experience? No, I've had those, but that wasn't necessarily, that was just a shift in my understanding about who I was. A couple of the God ones I read, I can't remember the book. Anyway, so the book suggested that you write these things out like 10 times a day. And one was, he lays me down in green, or he leads me by green pastures, lays me down, leads me by still water, lays me down in green pastures and restores my soul. And I did that exercise, writing it for a couple days, 10 times, whatever. And then on the way home, I was reciting it in my head. And boom, I was like, oh, wow, God can heal me. Like, because I knew I was screwed up. I knew my mind was messed up. I knew that I was mentally ill. Recognizing that's a big deal. But in that moment I realized, oh, God heals me. All this work that I'm doing, God is healing me. And so that recognition was a really big moment in my understanding of a higher power. Another one in the same book, The Power of Positive Thinking, that's what it was from, is I can do all things through God or through Christ, which strengthens me. So I'm not necessarily a Christian, so I put God in there because I'm going to keep it open. I'm just going to keep it open to whatever it is, right? But it's still a truth. Right? I can do all things, which includes this work. Anything that I do, if I turn it over to God and just do the work, all I'm supposed to do is take action, and God gives me the benefit. That's all you're supposed to do. But I can do anything through God. So that one was another transformational one. Let's see. There's a couple others here. Oh, well, the doctor's opinion, right? We realize that people who are wrong... Oh, no, the wrong one. Let's go to doctor's opinion. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false, etc., etc. That's talking about me and my relationship with alcohol. But when I read that and came to an understanding, my spiritual experience with this was that I was not able to tell the truth from the false about anything. Like, yeah, I wasn't just lying to myself about my alcoholism and the impact and all of those things. I was lying to myself completely about everything. I can do this, I can do that. I'm not capable of doing anything. And to take yourself down to that level, to humiliate yourself or humble yourself to that point where you realize, I don't know anything. I thought I knew everything, and I truly, as a human animal, know nothing. I know nothing. And that was a big moment. And it's important to recognize that, especially when you've not been trained by the father and the mother that is supposed to train you as a human, right? That we thought there's, so this goes to my fourth step and fifth step, and this was probably the biggest outcome from my fourth and fifth step, the first one. This was our course. We realized that people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. And when I did my fourth and fifth step, the biggest outtake from that was that my mother was sick. And I recognized finally that my mother was, how ill she was. And all of her behavior towards me and towards my brothers and my father was a result of her illness. And so that's the first opportunity of compassion that I had in my life, that becomes a practice as best as I can, right? This one also from Because I'm an Alcoholic in the book. This is a story. I left research and became a gardener. So this is the interesting. So I'm sitting where Karen's sitting. Jackie is sitting across from me. And we're reading this story on a Friday. And I read this passage. Like, I didn't, had never read this before. And I was the one reading this part. And I'm just going to skip to the part that is relevant. I left research and became a gardener. And I was like, I'm a gardener. and then it said I discovered I'm a lesbian and that I love women, and I was like, that's the first time I ever heard anything about being gay in the book, which is good. And I had not come out to people in the room yet, and I'm fulfilling a long time dream of not writing fiction. So that, just that part. And then right at the end of reading that, I was like, I'm also gay. But I'm not ashamed of it. And then I just was like, or maybe I am. I said that for the first time. Because you grow up hiding your attraction. You're, you know what I mean? You're always guarding yourself. You know, it's tough. It's just what it is, right? It's just what it is. Culture, whatever. I'm not blaming anybody, but I grew up being extremely ashamed of myself for being gay. And that was the first time. And then Jackie reached over to me at the end of the meeting and was like, you know, and that was the first time that he's not gay, you know, but he has his own shame. And it was the first time I realized that men and women, you know, experience shame in their life. You know, everybody has their shame. And it impacts them tremendously. And that was one, and it was a good one. So, you know, I'm not big on like, you know, I just don't, it's not a big part of my life anymore. I don't talk about it, but it's just, it was for me. It was something that was important to lay out on the table and to recognize for the first time. And then AA is not a plan of recovery. It is that can be finished and done with. It is a way of life. This is from the Keys of the Kingdom. And the challenge contained in its principles is great enough to keep any human being striving for as long as he lives. I mean, this is just the true aspect of it. It's like the game doesn't, this isn't over. Life isn't over. My sobriety isn't over. And this is where the yoga comes in, right? So when I, you know, everybody knows that I love yoga, I practice yoga. Now I teach yoga, you know. This program made me a yoga teacher. Like, it did, because every time I would drive past the extension, I said to myself, I want to teach there. I want to teach those men a little bit about yoga. Like, I know none of you are going to come to, you know, and do yoga as much as I do. It's okay. If you're working out in the gym, you're doing the physical aspect of yoga. Everybody thinks the physical aspect of yoga is yoga. It's only the small piece. This is all yoga. All of this. When you're studying who you are, you're practicing yoga. 4 and 5, studying who you are. You're studying yourself. You know, yoga is about self-realization. It's like, sounds really awesome. I want to be self-realized. What am I realizing? I'm realizing that I'm an asshole who is untrained in the world, who doesn't know, who doesn't understand everything that I think that I understand. Like, this is self-realization. You know, and you're doing that. We're doing that right here. And then it's also, you know, you've got all these principles. You know, you've got all these things that we, you know, honesty, willingness, openness, all of these things, they're all in yoga too. We use different words. That's all, you know. And that's where my journey of seeking a higher power comes in, where I went and read some Christian stuff. I read this Hindu stuff. I walked by past a yoga class. I did a yoga class, and I was like, oh, I need prayer and meditation. This is where they teach prayer and meditation. So why don't I try that? And then I got hooked, right? So prayer and meditation for me is where it's at, right? When you're meditating, when you're praying, you're meditating. But meditation is everything. It's not that it clears everything up. It makes me see all of this more clearly in myself. When I meditate on a regular basis, I'm able to see everything about who I am. That's being self-realized, right? And then being able to take action instead, like take a different action, right? You know, I'll finish up almost done. In the 12 and 12, it talks about, you know, prayer and meditation, and it goes through St. Francis prayer, and it shows you how to break it down. That's a type of meditation, right? And it's in yoga as well. Well, this is cool because I like to see where these principles or where these practices are outside, because it's all about practice now for me, like practicing. So that is a practice, right? And so one of the prayers called the Ish Upanishad in yoga, which are really Hindu, I did the same thing to that. And it's a great piece of work to read because it teaches you about God. Like, and we're all trying to figure out what God is. And I'm not saying it is what God is. I'm saying it's some information about God you might want to look at to have a better understanding of what you might want to add into your flavor of God, what that is. But one of the passages, in dark night we live those for whom the world without alone is real. In night darker still for those for whom the world within alone is real. The first leads to a life of meditation, the second to a life of action. But those for whom who combine action with meditation, cross the sea of death through action, and enter into immortality through meditation. So we can live our lives out here in our ego, and that leads to suffering. We can meditate all we want on who we are and suffer. But if we take our ego and we take our meditation and combine them and live life being aware of who we are in the present moment, right? That's what that's about, is that you live your life. You live the best life that you possibly can because you have access to the choices that God is giving you. You don't have access. If I take a drink, I will lose my access to any choice that I have. And so it's not about the yoga. It's about this program, and you're doing that. And I did that. And I service is a part of it. All spiritual traditions. It's a practice. So practice it. If you don't understand this practice of service, find another practice of service and figure it out. You know, all of these things are practice. That's what yoga gave me, is the understanding of, if I want to be successful here, I have to practice it. And practice, I'll just end with this, is constantly. Practicing these things is moment to moment, every moment of every day. That's a hard task, but it's definitely a task worth fighting for, because otherwise I have no life. I have no life. And I will lose all of you. Right? So I want to thank you for keeping me sober and giving me a life that I never... When I came out, I was looking for something. It wasn't until I came in here, until I found exactly what it is that I was looking for. All my life, that emptiness was filled in this room. Through the worst thing that about me, my suffering, alcoholism, became the liberation that I was looking for. Not being gay, not starting a business, getting sober. So, thank you.